From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Hi everyone, it's Dice Man Mark here and I'm with Dice Fiancée Sarah.
Hi everyone.
And look, I'm going to leave the fancy intros to Leon, all those ukuleles and stuff, because, well, I'm too busy chilling out here, currently aboard Voyager of the Seas in Kowloon Harbour. The next day or so, we set sail down the Vietnamese coast, eventually ending up in Singapore. We've just spent a week here in Hong Kong, where I was lucky enough to go to a couple of board game cafes. So shout out to Jolly Thinkers in Hong Kong and also Capstone Games. Sarah and I were lucky enough to pop in there, play a game, meet the owners and have a lovely time. You can check out my photos on Instagram at DiceManCometh. But what's on the show this week? I don't care. Probably not cocktails by the pool or Asian ocean dining experiences. Who knows? We're having a ball. Hope the guys have a great show and look after you all while I'm away. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
And not bye, it's hello, because it is episode 258 of The Dice Men Cometh with two-thirds of us, but there was the other third. Leon's over there, Garth's over here, and Mark is hopefully sailing safely on the high seas.
I find it very inconsiderate that he would go overseas and take his presence away from our listeners. I mean, that's just a horrendous thing to do to people. Well, there are fans out there that they're after a specific kind of fun from us three, and to do that, he should be ashamed of himself.
Exactly right. Another thing he should be not ashamed of himself is that eagle-eared listeners may have heard Dice Fiancée Sarah. So can you believe, Leon, that somehow Mark, in his mature years, presumably was able to get down on one knee?
No, not in the slightest.
And then ask one of the most important questions of his life. And then she said yes. And everyone cried and was all happy. And
well, they have been by the bar a lot, so who knows?
Who knows, indeed. So no doubt Mark will want to share his own story when he gets back. But no, look. But
best of luck to the both of them. We do love them dearly, and all jokes aside.
It's but wonderful.
But jokes put it back into the front of us. What are you thinking, love? Get out while you can.
Look, fear of dying alone is one thing, but yeah. You know, he did the right thing. Yeah. She was captive on a cruise. Where she could go.
Smart man.
Exactly right. Lots of future planning, I'm sure.
Yes.
So anyway, what are we talking about tonight? Well, Leon.
Yes.
You are back for your jaunt.
I am.
You didn't propose to your wife again or do anything crazy like that?
No, I didn't feel the need to. I thought just going over to the other side of the world after 36 hours of travel and then just enjoying 3 weeks of decadence, I thought that'd probably do it.
Well, I think it will, and no doubt later on in the episode you'll have the nerve to tell us all about it.
To be fair, I probably should have proposed again because neither of us took our wedding rings over there because we both completely forgot.
Well, what happens on holiday stays on holiday, Leon.
Indeed.
So I don't know what you did. So look, before we get to Leon's travelogue, we are going to start episode 258 with a bit of a discussion about a game that we played only last night.
Yes, because I haven't touched a board game in, well, as you hear in my travels, about 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, so you have got to put on your Dice Man badge and earn a bit of that nerd cred back. So
sure do.
Before we get to that, we're going to throw to a song, come back. You are with the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio at 99.3 FM. And here is your song.
Hi, this is Ella from Ella Loves Board Games, and my favorite podcast is The Dice Men Cometh.
Well, there you go. That was something to wake up to by a good... Who was it? It was Sunny?
Sunny.
There you go. Little Tasmanian act. So, we are The Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and Leon has to somehow remember how to talk about a game that is theoretically a topic that you really, really like talking about.
I certainly do. So it has been a while, so I might be a bit rusty, but hey, we will give it a crack. And I've maybe jet-lagged even though I've been back for a week because I'm just all over the shop. So we're going to talk about a game that is made by the company by the name of Gamelin Games. Now, everyone out there will probably know who they are because they are the people behind your Tiny Epic series. You guys talked recently while I was away about Heroes of Land, Air and Sea, which is basically their attempt at, after all these years, people saying, well, we like their games, why do you have to make them tiny? Why don't you make a big one? So they did.
They made the biggest one.
and it was good, and everything you said about it was wrong. So, which I explained on the next episode, which is completely fine. So, yeah, so this is a game, but the reason I wanted to mention them is that they're a company that are kind of, they show you the times that we are in the board gaming world, because Gamelin Games, pretty much everything they do goes on to Kickstarter. Mm. So they're a company that didn't really exist kind of 5-6 years ago. I mean, they might have brought out a tiny game here and there. I can't say I didn't do my research that well. Welcome back, Leon. Back into the same situation I've always been in. But, yeah, so pretty much all their games have come directly from Kickstarter. So Scott Arms is the man behind Gamelin Games and pretty much everything Tiny Epic.
Yeah.
So this series of games is exactly what it says on the box. They want to be a game that you can fit, not quite in your pocket, but very close. A game you could fit in a bag quite easily and take with you anywhere. But this isn't. They are not 5-minute games.
No.
These are the games that could very easily, like we said, why they made Heroes of Land, Air and Sea. These are games that you could very easily play for an hour, 90 minutes, 2 hours, depending on the situation, and they have a lot of replayability to them as well. So they started off with Tiny Epic Kingdoms, which is kind of your basic fantasy type game of, it's your basic little 4X type of game. You're trying to explore and exploit the land and whatever else with your fantasy, I was about to say your ghosts and goblins, but that's not quite. But there's goblins in there, that's for sure, and your orcs and your elves and your whatever else. So that's where they started. Then they moved on to Tiny Epic Defenders, which, again, is still a fantasy setting, but it's more of a tower defense type of thing, which was definitely the style at the time when that game first came out, which was probably 4 or 5 years ago now. Then we've got ourselves Tiny Epic Galaxy, which is where they went, you know, people expect us to do another fantasy game. We'll go the exact opposite.
To space!
Yes, and go into space. So it's a game that's possibly their most well-received in a critical sense, I think, Tiny Epic Galaxies. That's all these have kind of had an expansion so far, so they've all done relatively well for themselves. Then there was Tiny Epic Quest, which is very similar to like a video game, like a Yazelda type of thing, where you're exploring a land a bit more intimate than that of your Tiny Epic Kingdom. Mm-hmm. You're actually a hero going around. And that's where they first introduced Item Meeples.
Item Meeples.
Which we will get to later, but the fact that they even exist in this day and age is amazing.
Yes.
And very big fans of it. then the two that one is coming out very soon, which is Tiny Epic Tactics, which is very similar to like your tactics style of video game, like, funnily enough, your Final Fantasy Tactics and things of that nature. There's also Tiny Epic Mechs, which is a game which I believe is just a one versus all your friends, get into big giant mech meeples, I'm guessing they're going to call them, and just battle it out.
Smash.
Then there was also Tiny Epic Western, which was, I think, my favourite of the series up to this point, which was a game that's kind of like an area control game, but you were using poker cards as well, and the theme, you know, being at Western. This was before the kind of, this year's kind of Mars was the other year, and your Vikings. I think Westerns is very close to being the theme of the last 6 months or year.
Yeah, it has been. But this was around a couple of years ago because we did play it at PAX, I think 2016, 2017, something like that. So it must have been hot off the Kickstarter presses then.
Yes. So the one we're going to talk about today, you've probably guessed it if you know all their games and have whittled it down, is we're going to talk about Tiny Epic Zombies. Yes. Because zombies are, I don't know if they're back necessarily in fashion, but they've got past the, oh, another bloody zombie game, to being like, yeah, I'd play one again, fine.
Yes,
exactly. It's been long enough, we can have a crack at it. All right, so the zombie outbreak has swept across the country and the dead won't stay dead. Trapped in the Echo Ridge Mall, as you always tend to be, a small band of humans from all walks of life must save the world. They have to keep their heads cool and their guns loaded as they face a wall of undead horror. With some quick thinking and some lucky headshots, they might fulfill their objectives and get out alive, or at least not be lunch.
Yes. Yeah, that bit, hey?
Yes, where you get munched on. So this is a game, Gamelin Games, they often do this, and especially in the last few years with their games, that you can play this game so many different ways. Straight away on page one when you turn to it, they've got your components, and then they've got the game modes. Now, the one we're going to talk about tonight was the one that we played, which was the cooperative versus the zombie. So one person takes control of all the zombies, and everyone else gets to have their turns as well. You can also play pure cooperative, where you just use a kind of a randomizer for the zombie players. Then you could have competitive, which is very similar, except you're fighting over with your friends to battle the objectives as well as the undead. And then there's a solo mode, which I'm sure Mark can talk about when he gets back. So yes.
Is he allowed to do solo mode now he's engaged? I don't know.
I guess not. I guess we're not going to talk about any sort of solo gaming anymore.
Exactly.
Oh, I feel sorry for everyone out there that asked us to do reviews. we have video games. I'm very, very sorry. So the way that this game works is that you set up the mall. Now, the mall consists of 8 different tiles that will always be completely random. You have the tiles that are on the north, south, east, and west, and then the other ones that are on the vertical axis.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. That's probably not the right grammars, but I don't care. I'm blaming the jet lag from a week ago. So you'll set up this mall and you'll place your survivors in the middle of it. So the way that this game works, the way to win it, is simply that you will be given 3 objectives out of the 9 in the box. Again, the replayability of these games is pretty much through the roof, and that's what they want it to be. They want this to be the game that if you and your family like, you take this game on holiday, you can play it 10 times in a row, and it's going to be different every time.
Yeah, considering that there's a big emphasis on the tiny here, which is it is a tiny box. As you say, it can virtually fit in a decent-sized pocket.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 2/3 the size of a VCR disc.
A VCR disc. Well, put it this
really
way.
Current.
My 1990s-style new metal jeans that I tend to wear, you can fit it in the pockets of them quite nicely. Probably not these days with the kids with that kind of stuff, but yeah, it can be done. So you've got your 3 objectives, and the aim of the game in your cooperative is to work together to achieve these 3 objectives. In the competitive mode, it's the exact same, except you're trying to complete those objectives by yourself and be the first one of your friends to complete those objectives. Now, I don't believe, from what I read, that you do any sort of, like, attacking of your fellow players. It's just a race between the lot of you, and you're not really... If things don't really benefit you and they hinder your opponents, you probably wouldn't be too fazed if that happened at all. So that's the way it works. So you're going to set up this game and rock and roll from there. So the way it's going to go is that the zombie player will have a turn every time after a player turn. So last night, Garth went, then I went, then my wife Sarah went, then I went again. So the zombies are moving quite a lot around. And the thing about this game, and they say it many times in the book, and it's highlighted, is that you have to move.
Moving is everything in this game.
Which is good for the thematic sense that with the zombies, yes, you can't just kind of turtle because they are coming. This isn't a mall that's secured. This isn't your remake of The Walking Dead where they're all outside, kind of build up your barricades, you're all right. They are coming in. You need to get the objectives done and get out of dodge. So you have to worry about that as well as worry about everything else that's going on.
Yes. And the thing is, with only 2 human players and 1 zombie player, the action heats up very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I would assume it would heat up just as quickly when you're playing this with, I think you can play it maximum of 5, so 4v1. Is that how it works?
Yep, you can do.
Because of this, you know, player, zombie, player, zombie, player, zombie action, and it's, you can never not be paying attention to what the other players are doing, especially what the other zombie, well, the zombie is doing,
because,
they can screw you over.
Yeah. So we ended up learning this game and then playing it in about the span of an hour, which they say here you can play the game with it about 30 minutes. Once you know this game, I'd say that's probably about right, because once you know the turns and kind of how they work, there's not really... It's not complicated. It's not the easiest game in the world, that's for sure. But it scales very well. At no point did it ever feel like the players were insanely, like, they're going to do this absolutely easily. Or did it feel like, oh, the zombies are going to absolutely trounce us. It was definitely a give and take that sometimes I'd be ahead, sometimes you guys would be ahead, and it worked that way all the way to the end of it.
Sure did. But that's cool. You want that tension because there's no point, with especially a game like this, which admittedly doesn't play that long, which is awesome, but you want that little bit of time to be full of tension, full of excitement, and make sure that your decisions are actually making a difference.
Yeah.
And that's where a couple of the reviews I've heard have said, if you're playing full co-op and just having the zombies run by the game mechanics, that's not as good because obviously the game mechanics can't be as cunning and as tricky as an evil human zombie over.
Yeah, I was going to say, or as evil. That's exactly the point. So the reason I mentioned before about the running is that on the human's turn, you always have to move. You'll pretty much get 3 actions on your turn, which could be from kill zombies to activate abilities that you have or a special room has or tokens that are in there or collect items that get dropped, like I said, and you can snap them onto those item meeples.
Which is cool. Yeah, an AK on my little meeple.
Yeah, the one sentence review for this game is, do you want to strap a chainsaw to a little meeple? Then you're pretty much good with this game.
Although, as I said on the night, all of the ranged weapons are right-handed.
Yeah, but
being a lefty, I don't know whether I should take offence at
that. Yes, but we get all the melee weapons, which in a zombie apocalypse, I'd probably rather take that melee before I take that gun. I want that probably chainsaw or that samurai sword before that gun.
I don't know, I'd find pulling a trigger with the right hand just to be a little bit off.
Yeah, true, very true. So, the reason, again, I haven't actually got to it yet, about this moving is because on your turn, like I said, you would do three actions, but you always have to move first. The first thing you do on your turn will be move. Mm. If you're in a room where you have to do something, or there's a zombie in this room I want to kill, or there's a thing I want to activate, it doesn't matter. You have to move because you're constantly on the go, which I think is actually thematically cool because in my head, it makes me think of a TV, your Walking Dead or something like that, and you go like, yes, you might be in a situation where you, okay, this is the room I need to be in and activate it, and there might be a zombie in it I can easily kill, but things always happen in these, you know, these bits of fiction with zombies in it.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to constantly be on the go.
No, you're 100% right, and a little thing that I don't think you've mentioned yet is that each of the cards, of which you said, is it eight, is that right? Mm. Each of them are a store.
Yes.
And each store is made up of three rooms. And a move can be from one room to the other. It's not from a card to another card, although you can move between cards because they're all considered adjacent to each other, kind of. So, yeah, you always have to move at least from the room you're in to an adjacent room in order to then be able to do something, which will generally go along the lines of killing things, collecting things, upgrading your meeple to an item meeple of death.
Yeah, because the zombie player, what they're trying to do, they're either trying to kill off the players, because that's the way that they can win, or they can do it by overrunning the players with their zombies by destroying the barricade in the center of the game. So again, it's all about getting those zombies and placing them strategically. And the way you can do that is something that I have not seen in any other game, which I think is quite clever, is that every turn that the zombie player has, they will give a card to each of the players. So the characters don't actually have a deck of a hand of cards, but the zombie player does. And these are cards that are taken from the main supply deck of the game, which is also a timer that if that deck runs down to the bottom, it means you've been overwhelmed as well. So that deck contains items, it contains things that will go in your backpack, different melee weapons, different events that can come up. Normally they help the zombie player because things explode and whatnot.
Yes.
So I have a hand in front of me, and okay, well, I've got two events here that are like overrun with zombies. That's awesome. But I've also got this big AK, I've got this chainsaw. And the thing is with this game is that you don't draw a new card at the end of your round. You'll get rid of your whole hand before you draw more cards. So at some point, I have to give these guys these cards.
That's right.
So I know, like, they're looking for this. For instance, last night, they were looking to send out radio signals. So I had all these cards in my hand that were radio beacons. And I was like, at some point, I'm going to have to give it to them. But I'd look at it and go, well, my wife is going after the radio stuff. Clearly, I'm going to give this card to Garth then, because that's the way you would do it. But the cool thing I really liked about these cards, which would be revealed at the end of the player's turn, is that there'd be a little symbol up in the top corner. And that little symbol would be one of four different symbols in four different colours that match the different rooms on the board. And what they mean is that if the player has finished their turn in a room where the symbol of that room matches the symbol on the card that I've given them, I get to do my zombie ability. Because the really cool thing about this game is that the characters, there's like 14 different characters you can choose from. I'm not sure if that's with all the Kickstarter exclusives or if that's just in the base game, because I have the Kickstarter deluxe version. They all have their human player side, but then you flip them over, they all have their zombie player side. And again, like any good game, they are different because everyone has their passive abilities and special abilities and stuff like that. Again, adding to the replayability.
Correct. And all the characters are the ones you would expect. You've got the Morcop and the photographer and the teenager and the mechanic and the survivalist and all those ones that we know and love from basically every zombie, everything, all the time.
Yeah. So when this happens and I have figured out and I've gone, okay, I think Garth's going to go there on his turn. I was correct. We've matched the symbols. I get to do my zombie attack. And by doing that, it's obviously bad for Garth.
Yes.
And I get to move up on my track, which makes my zombie guy stronger and they can do stronger attacks later. And I think that's a really clever thing that I'd like to see in other games. The idea of you giving it to somebody and kind of going, I hope this pays off.
Yeah.
That alone kept me engaged as a zombie player. Because I had the strategy of I can send out zombies and try and stop them. But using those cards and going, oh, I'm going to give this card to this person because I think they're going to go here. And what, it gave an extra layer to being the zombie player, which I really appreciate.
Absolutely, because even though as a human player you know you're going to be able to do at least three moves, or you're going to be doing three moves more often than not, you're only ever generally going to be able to get into maybe three or four of the shop as an option. So although there's eight potential options that Leon as the zombie player can choose, there's probably less than half of those which is realistic that I'd be able to get to on my turn.
Yep.
And of those, there's a chance that two might be the same colour because the mall is laid out randomly. So it is a pretty good decision-making situation for Leon as the zombie because he's going to give me that face down card. So I don't know what he's chosen, but it makes me question as the human player. I want to go to this room because I need to get something there to, you know, complete a quest, or, oh, there's a samurai sword that I really want to collect and attach. But Leon probably thinks that's what I'm going to do. And if I go there, yeah, I'm going to get the loot, but then I might immediately become overrun by zombies, or Leon will have a superpower he'll be able to do, which is bad. And again, that's keeping every player engaged in every other player's turn, which I like.
Yeah. And when you attack the zombies in this game, it is as simple as you go into a space with them. You're always going to kill them, which I think is cool because everyone starts off with a knife and a pistol as your basic melee and ranged weapon. But you will roll a die to see how well you do. You can either take a wound from it or you can get away scot-free. Again, which is perfect because sometimes you watch those shows like The Walking Dead and stuff and you think, oh, they've walked into a store, there's a zombie that's shambling and really old and they've got a shotgun. Of course they're going to win. Sometimes they don't. Mm. Sometimes they trip. Sometimes another zombie comes in. You never know. But you can also perform an overkill. And when that happens, there's a big green splattered skull on the dice. And it means you can then move your character to another space. And if there's another zombie there, you can roll that die again and maybe get another overkill. And you can just basically turn into Michonne and just go hog wild, which again adds to the kind of every zombie film we've seen where sometimes one zombie can give a party so much jip, whereas other times they just turn into Rambo himself. That's and right. Just go crazy on everything.
Indeed. And the other thing that I really like about the dice mechanic that you use is that you'll use that a lot of the time in the objectives that the human players are trying to achieve as well. So, for example, last night, as well as being able to try and get the radio frequencies right, we were also trying to quarantine zombies to presumably give them to the CDC so that they could do some research on them and try and figure out how to not make zombies so much anymore. And we had to roll that die to try and successfully capture one. But we might do it. We might not. We might just have the status quo and have to keep trying, or we might take wound after wound after wound after wound after wound, and that becomes really deadly because your life, of which there is a maximum of 9 health that you have, is the same track as there are bullets that you will need to do ranged attacks. Every range attack will always cost you 1 bullet. Now, they use the same track on your player board, which starts at 0 and goes to 9. Bullets start at 9. Health starts at zero because you're fully healthy. If those two tokens ever meet or cross, you're dead.
Yeah, and I really like that from a thematic sense, that it very much reminds me of Dungeons & Dragons in the sense that in D&D, your hit points, they don't actually mean your actual hit points. What they mean is your ability to get up and keep going in a fight. So that's what it could be. If you're running for hours and then you run into a fight, they could say you've taken 5 hit point damage just because you're exhausted as a character. That's right. And that's what they do in this game. They say if those wounds and those bullets ever cross paths, even if you've only taken a couple of wounds but you've used heaps of bullets, it represents your ability to survive in this, which is rather deep for a game that is kind of cartoony and tiny epic in the way that it is. But it's a really cool idea. And then when that happens and your character dies, don't fret, because your character can die kind of at least once as long as you've kept that barricade up.
That's right.
However, you will get a new character, which is grand, and you can go after the equipment that you just dropped, but the zombie player will get your character. So they take that card. I think you had the survivalist, was it?
I did.
That died. I took him, flipped over, and he became my zombie survivalist.
Yeah, which means the zombie player now doesn't have one zombie power to choose from. Leon could choose to be the zombie mall cop or the zombie survivalist.
Yep.
And then as the game progressed and he killed more of us, he had more and more options from which to attempt to destroy us.
Yes. So I ended up winning, me. But it was very close the whole way through. And the thing that if we played a second game, changed up the objectives or the cures, it could have gone a completely different way. Which, again, what you want from these games and the replayability. So that's how the game actually works. Now, what we think of is I was a lot more impressed with this than I thought that I would be, because some of the other Tiny Epic games that I've played, I have owned over the time, I think Tiny Epic Quest and Tiny Epic Kingdom, and some of the games I've played have been fine, but I've ended up not keeping the games. Like, it was all right, but it didn't kind of light my world on fire. Whereas this, I could see happily playing again. And again, in sort of, it's a game that I could see playing several different times in a night if you changed up the objectives and who wants to be the zombie person, who wants to be the normal character. And I think after all the years of making these Tiny Epic games, they really started to find their niche for these type of systems, for this a game that you can play over and over again. So it was actually, I ended up being a lot more impressed than what I thought I would be.
Yeah, look, me too. I looked at it and I went, yeah, that's tiny. And is it epic? Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
But mechanically speaking, so simple.
Yep.
So the ability for a player to sit down, having never seen it before, and play it quickly is right there.
Mm-hmm.
The replayability, as you say, where there are dozens of characters to choose from, each with unique abilities. There are 8 maul cards that are double-sided, so you can have some weird combination of maul that is almost different every single time.
Mm-hmm.
The objectives, which they are changeable in themselves again. And then the fact that you've got 5 different modes of play, so that you can play it as fully cooperative, you can play it as competitive, and the objectives change around that as well. So I think for a game that is probably 20, 30 bucks or so, I don't know, but it's not much money.
No.
It does cram a lot into a small package.
And we have played games that have been talking the $100 value that have not had the type of gameplay mechanics and the replayability and even, dare I say it, the epicness of what this gives you in such a small box. So I think, like I said, some of their games are a bit hit and miss, but I think for us and for this one, I think they've definitely landed on a hit.
Yeah, I think it's good. I would happily sit down and play it again because you can knock through it in about half an hour.
Yep.
And that's what I like. I think some older people with poorer eyesight might have some issues because the abilities of each shop, the text is really quite small, so you've got to go and look at it, but that's a nature of it being deliberately compact and small.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Tiny Epic Zombies, Where the Dice Men Cometh. We're going to throw to a song, and then we're going to come and talk about Leon's holidays. So here we are on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we'll see you in a moment.
Hello, everybody. This is Steve O'Rourke from New York. Congratulations on your good taste in gaming and podcasts. You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh.
Well, there you go. That was Jed Appleton with Flowers in My Hair. A little Tassie act again. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, we are going to switch along to Leon's adventures in US of A land because yeah, he's just come back from living out his dreams.
Yeah, give or take. I've done something that's, if you'd asked me as a kid, what's the one thing you could kind of do going through the entire world? And I did it.
Wow.
And that was to go see the wrestling, which I've been a big fan of since I was a young'un.
Yeah, not just some of the wrestling. It seems like all of the wrestling.
Yes, so I went over to see WrestleMania in New York, which was fun to be a fun in outside in a stadium in New Jersey with 80 other thousand people, which was quite interesting. But first, we had to get there.
You did, yes.
And we decided, I don't know when we decided on the trip, we're like, well, if we're going to go to New York, we might as well go to Toronto first because everyone said, you know, well, Canada, A, it's another whole country that you can go to and it's rather large. And everyone just said, they're basically just like cold Australians. We're like, okay, we've got to check that theory out. And they're dead on.
Yep.
It's pretty much like Toronto for me. It's like if you'd said it's Melbourne on a cold day, a bit, yep, it yep, sure is. I mean, there's a lot more hockey jerseys going around. But other than that, it's about the same.
That's what I remember feeling the same way the first time I went to Vancouver.
Yep.
And it's like, because I had planned to move to Vancouver. This was in 2007.
Right.
I'd got the paperwork, got the okay to move with my job, and then we had the nerve to fall pregnant. Life changed dramatically.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I'm pretty sure it was a better option. But yeah. Anyway.
So I did it. This was the only time I kind of did a little bit of board gaming over there because Toronto is the home of Snakes and Lattes, which is, it's not exactly the world's probably first board game cafe, but it's probably arguably the most famous.
It's a very, very well-known
yeah,
situation, isn't it?
Yeah, so we went to two of them over there, and I was luckily enough the first one we went to run into Stephen Tassie, which the fact that the first person we really met in Toronto's last name was Tassie is, to this day, kind of, I can't believe that that's what's happened, considering there's a few million Canadians. Did you know that?
I did. And there's even more than there is Australians.
Yes.
Just.
So he is he's a man that is involved in Snakes and Lattes. He's also been a game designer himself. He years ago brought out Grave Robbers from Outer Space,
ooh,
which was a game that had about 10 expansions, which has gone through several different developers over the years. And I was talking to him about it, and it's basically a game that very similar to kind of your Illuminati mm-hmm, site. Like, it definitely looks like it that anyway. But it's about old kind of B-movie tropes from that we grew up. Some, you know, some are horror, some are sci-fi, things like that. It's a game that I basically said to him, 20 or so times, you should get this out again, because I think this would, if you put this on Kickstarter, I think you tried to do it a few years ago, probably 6 or 7 years ago, but I said, but you know, I didn't have to tell him, but he knew. Kickstarter's changed a lot since then.
Has it ever?
So it was definitely something. But we sat down and played a prototype of a game that he had come up with like the day or two before,
yep.
which he was lying in bed and just thought, I like dexterity games and I like sandwiches, so something should be done about this. So we played... We played a prototype of a game that he was coming up with called 1-2-3 Panini.
Okie dokie.
Which was just a good laugh. And it was just nice to meet someone, again, from... You forget you might talk hear from us now, especially if you're in the States or in the UK, but it took 36 hours of travel for me to get to Toronto, which I will repeat to many people that I tell this story about of my travels, because... You don't think that'd take it out of you, but you'd be amazed.
Well, 36 hours of sitting down, yeah, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
But when it's 36 hours involving several flights and multiple time zones and yeah. then lots of waiting, and there's the old famous saying when it comes to international travel, which is hurry up and wait.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, absolute first world troubles. I had my wife with me and I was getting served food, and I had my Nintendo Switch and my iPhone on me, so it could have been a lot worse. But yeah, it took a bit of hassle.
Yeah.
So that was Toronto, and we did a few different things around Toronto. We had actually no kind of agenda. It was just go there and enjoy Toronto. So we walked around a lot of the places, as we tend to on holiday, just enjoying the place itself.
Well, and eating the places.
Oh, yes.
So I'm going to ask you at the end some food-related questions, but
yeah.
Anyone who is lucky enough to be a Facebook associate of yours got slapped in the face with basically every type of meal possible in North America.
But there was for good reason for that, because this is the first time I've gone on my little jaunts before, as people on the show have known. I've gone to Europe and I've gone to Asia and whatever. It was the first time in North America, and I thought, I'm going to make this fun for everyone to see all these crazy food that we're going to be eating. So I started a little competition with all my Facebook friends to see how much weight am I going to gain, because when me and my lady wife go on holiday, we go on holiday. So I'm a man that I go to the gym regularly. I take care of what I eat, my wife even more so. But when we're on holiday, oh boy.
Yeah, loosen the belt buckle.
The gloves come off, the skin comes off, the marrow comes off. We get stuck into it. And in Canada especially, the old Tim Hortons, so yep. there was a donut or two had, that's for sure. So we were there for a few days, and then we moved on to Niagara Falls,
mm-hmm.
because it's only a stone's throw from Toronto itself. And it's Niagara Falls, isn't it?
It is.
And the hotel that Garth put us in, did I mention that Garth had a hand in a lot of this?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so good on him. He did good.
You had a nice falls view room, didn't you?
Well, I don't know what the room that you set us up with. We actually got upgraded to another room.
Yeah, it sounds like that something
had
I'd do.
Probably better than... I don't think you had anything to do with it. But either way, we were literally, yes, we were sitting in a room looking at all of Niagara Falls, which is one of those things that you just... It's very hard to imagine. And just the fact that I can say that I've done that is kind of insane. And at night time, when they've turned the lights on and illuminated it, which we didn't even know was a thing, to look out after a nice meal we had earlier that night, to come to the hotel room and to look out and go, oh, they're like bright purple, the falls. That's kind of insane.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you did the chopper ride, didn't you?
Yes, we did. We went on a helicopter, which, Mark would probably laugh at me, considering, he was one of those, in the services man that used to go on choppers and stuff all the time.
But yeah, rappel down things. But
yeah.
That was in the 40s and 30s.
Yeah, it's a long, long time ago. A lot more risky back then, I think. But yeah, first time in a helicopter, and that was amazing. It was like 10, 15 minutes, but my God, and to be over Niagara Falls while doing it, not a bad little choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that was Canada done and dusted. Absolutely loved it. And then we moved on to the big chunk of the tour, which was to New York itself, which you guys heard from when I did a few intros while I was over there. And we pretty much ate the place to the ground.
Yeah, I don't think there's a Big Apple left. I didn't see any photos of fruit.
Oh, that's a lie, Garth. Sometimes there was bits of strawberries on top of those cheesecake. But yes.
And maybe some tomato in your burgers.
Yes, there was not much brisket or cheesecake left in New York once we were done with it. But yes, went over there to see the wrestling, and we saw 5 or 6 nights of different shows of wrestling. We got to go to Madison Square Garden, one of the most famous stadiums in the world, and watch some of my favorite wrestlers there from a Japanese company that held a big show there, and that was the highlight of the wrestling tour anyway. And that was amazing. And then we got got to see a few Broadway shows. We got to see The Lion King and Book of Mormon, which were as good as everybody says they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, just the whole city itself was rather nice, and any place that has a good subway system, I'm a big fan of.
Yep.
While we're over there, something very important. We met up with a good friend of ours, Stephen, who's a...
Steve O'Rourke.
Yes, O'Rourke from New York, who is a fan of our show, who's now just become a friend of ours over the years. I met up with him, and to see him face-to-face was kind of weird after chatting to him on Facebook for 4 or 5 years now and talking to him just and having a beer and whatnot and a giant pretzel, because as you do. And he was lucky enough to give us a goodie bag because he has a good friend, Alex, that works at Grey Fox Games.
Yeah.
And Grey Fox is one of my favourite small little companies. They are the people that make... Deception Murder in Hong Kong, which we're actually going to go and play later on this evening.
Can't wait.
Because we were looking for a fun way to entertain 6 people, and I said, there's not many better ways than Deception Murder in Hong Kong. So that's what we're going to go do, and we've got a few other bits and pieces from Grey Fox Games, which we'll be talking about in the coming weeks.
I know. So look, thanks so much to Stephen for making the time to waste with you and your lovely wife.
Well, basically,
but also to Grey Fox, because their generosity with providing us with a few bits and pieces that you're able to cart home with you is very much appreciated. And obviously, we'll be talking about them in a future episode.
And Alex from Grey Fox, we have got his contact details. We have been absolutely slack. We probably should have had an interview with him by now a few months ago, but we've just pure laziness. We haven't got around to it, but we certainly will, especially thanks to the lovely gifts he has given us.
Correct. So it sounds like you had fun.
Yes.
So, you're right, there didn't seem to be a lot of gaming going on there.
No, I visited a few cafes and stuff over there, didn't have a lot of chance to play much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I bought some, I say minis, they're humongous for some of my D&D friends, because over there, one of the few things where the price was actually a lot better than over here.
Wow.
For things like that. And I found a second-hand bookstore that had second-hand comic books in it, so that did me for a few hours one day and one rainy afternoon.
That's good.
Yes.
But New York, look, I haven't been there for, I think it's now 20 years.
Oh.
I have a feeling I went there with a mate in 1999.
Wow.
But it's one of those cities, isn't it? You can just never get enough of it, and you don't have to have a plan. You just walk around and go, huh, that's Central Park, and that's the Empire State Building, and there are all these amazing museums and all of this amazing everything, because it's New Goddamn York.
Yeah, with shoes on your feet and a phone in your pocket with Google Maps and a subway ticket, you're pretty much absolutely laughing.
Correct. So, I guessed that you would put on, I think, about 10 kilos.
Which, to be fair, not a bad guess, because I think when I went to Japan, which was, I think, not even 2 weeks, I think I nearly did that, which I don't know how, because the food over there, relatively healthy. I must have shoveled it in, which, to be fair, I would have.
But I didn't win.
No.
So you were a little bit more restrained than what I was going to give you credit for. Yeah. And I think it was about 7-odd. Is that right, if we're allowed to talk about that?
Nearly 7 kilos on the dot. So now the next competition will be and a lady at work with by the name of Sue. Lovely Sue. She won the competition and will be receiving her New York prize, because I did have a prize for this competition, as I always tend to. But, yeah, it's going to be now how long till I can get rid of that 7 kilos, which, you know, if I starve myself, I might be able to do it, but absolutely, I probably won't do that.
No. So where to next?
Where to next? That is a very, very good... My wife and I have never, ever done a holiday where we just sit by a pool and do nothing.
Mm.
I don't know if we would be able to. So I almost want to go to a place like a Thailand or a Bali and sit by a pool and just see if I can do it. See if I can just go, nope, I've got this book with me today, 200 pages, I'm knocking this off and I'm having margaritas and I'm not moving. I don't know if I could be able to do it with little fidgety hands and my little traveling legs, but hopefully I might be able to sort it out. But
I'm sure we'll figure you out.
But who knows? I hear there's a good board game cruise coming up at the end of the year.
There's an exceptional board game cruise. There isn't much availability left.
But no.
But if you're up free, Leon, from the 9th to the 18th of September this year, and can get yourself to Sydney, there are still spots available on this amazing board game cruise. There are now about 50-odd people who are going to be in this one spot for 9 nights or whatever it is of gaming galore.
I'll put it this way. If I didn't just go halfway around to the other side of the world and spend, you don't even want to know how much, I'd be on that cruise, don't you worry about it. And I may still even be on that cruise, even if I don't have any annual leave or a cent to my name. At least I might be able to get some good gaming in with some friends on the high seas.
Fantastic. And on that note, we're going to throw to a song before we wrap this episode up, because there's only 10 minutes or so left.
Yep.
So you're with the Dice Men Cometh. It's at Radio 99.3 FM, and here is another song.
Oh, I love this song. Excuse me, everyone.
Just wanted to pop in and say hello, it's Mark here, and welcome all the new listeners. What I'd love for you all to do, if you haven't done it before, is jump onto iTunes and leave us a review. 5 stars would be awesome, but whatever you think we're worth, it makes a big difference to helping us get the podcast out to all the people there who don't know about it already. Of course, we'd love you to support us on Patreon as well, and to share the love on all your social media feeds. But if you could do the iTunes review for us, that would be absolutely amazing. Anyway, back to the track.
That was Wolf Alice with Sad Boy on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You are with the Dice Men Cometh. Now, I have talked too bloody much, even though I haven't been here for the last few weeks.
Yeah, you've got a lot to make up for.
I know, so I might let Garth talk for a bit. But I was just having a quick look here. We've got a BGG page up, and just on the left, it just reminded me how much money I've spent on Kickstarter. I have not touched Kickstarter, I think, in probably nearly a couple of months. But in the last couple of weeks, between your Terraforming Mars, your Bloodborne, which came out yesterday and is going off, it's nuts.
Oh, it's crazy.
And your Blood on the Clock Tower, and I think there's something else as well. I've backed like 4 or 5 things in the last couple of weeks. Did I mention I had no money left after going to the States? What are you doing to me, board games? Anyway, Garth.
Yes. I'm a bit the same. I've backed, what is it, On Mars?
Yeah.
And some coins, and I've got a few other bits and pieces there. Anyway, we'll leave Kickstarter to Mark. So, look, I wanted to talk about Deep Sea Adventure. Because Deep Sea Adventure is a little game that the copy we've got is from Oink Games.
Indeed.
It's designed by Jun Sasaki and Goro Sasaki, but Jun is sort of the lead designer. He's done quite a few of these small box games for Oink.
Yes.
Deep Sea Adventure, is it In Our Grove?
Yep.
A Fake Artist Goes to New York, yep. A few others.
Masked Man is a wrestling one, yep. And there's a few other little bibs and bobs.
So in a similar theme to these tiny epic ones, these are tinier games. These are about the size of a pack of mints that you can definitely fit in your pocket.
Yeah.
And
not quite the ones that you're actually in like a mint tin, though.
No.
There's those that line of games.
Yes.
But these are the ones that are slightly bigger than that.
Absolutely. So this is Deep Sea Adventure, where 2 to 6 players... But I would always recommend playing this with more players.
Like I say, I don't think I've ever seen this like under 4. Always seen this, we've got 10 minutes, we've got a whole bunch of us sitting around waiting between big games.
Yes.
Chuck this on the table.
Exactly right. Now, I think I've talked about this one way, way, way back, but I wanted to talk about it again for a couple of reasons. First one is, last week when we had no episode and Mark released the Stephen Bonacor interview,
yes.
I took this with me to my little holiday, which was not nearly as exciting as yours. It was just South Coast, New South Wales and living by the beach. But we played this one about 10 bajillion times.
Ah.
So there was myself and my partner Joe and our kids, and then there was my mum and dad and my sister and her husband. And the good thing is, because I play 6, we were able to play games with some kids, we were able to play games with adults, we were able to play games with combinations thereof. Yep. And it is one of the easiest games to teach, because you can say it is Deep Sea Adventure, otherwise known as Everybody Dies.
Yes, pretty much.
Because you're going to start all in this one submarine, you've got a collective 25 oxygen, and all you're going to do is go down and down and down and down and down on a little generated deep sea adventure where every space is a chit with a T. And you want to go down and down and down, because the further down you get, if you can scavenge that particular chit and bring it back, it's treasure. And on the flip side of it is points. But you're not allowed to look at those points until the very end of the game. But the further down you get, the larger the potential points are going to be. And that's all fine. You go down, everything's hunky-dory, until someone starts taking that first bit of treasure. Because as soon as anyone starts taking treasure, on their next turn, they're going to start eating up that collective 25 oxygen. And that sucks.
Yeah.
Because 25 sounds like a lot, but when you've got 6 players there, it ain't a lot to go around.
No.
Especially because it also, treasure impacts you in this other way, where at the start of your turn, you've only got to really make a couple of decisions. The first one is, which way is my diver going? Am I going down or up? You can only ever change your mind once and change direction once. That's it. You'll then roll 2 dice, which look like D6s. They have 6 sides, but they only have pips numbered 1, 2, and 3, and that means the maximum you can roll is 6.
Yes.
So you roll those dice, and that is the number of movement that you've got. And the good thing is, you're not going to be counting spaces that your rival divers are on. So you can get down fast, potentially, and get up fast, potentially. Problem is, as soon as you got treasure, as well as eating oxygen, it eats your spaces because you're burdened with all this gold and loot and everything that you are hopefully trying to bring back. So if you've got two bits of treasure and you roll a three, you're moving a single space. And you look in any movie that involves the ocean and someone drowning, and you know how they almost always drown like 2 meters from the surface?
Yeah.
That's what this game feels like, because you've got these two or three bits of loot that you're sure are going to win you the game, and you only get one turn out of every six because there's five other players and they're eating up the oxygen you need, and you're only two spaces away, and you roll a dice and you roll a two and you can't move, but you've still used the oxygen up, and it just breaks your heart because as soon as that oxygen goes to zero, everyone who's not on the boat dies.
Yeah, for a tiny little game that's made up of, as you said, just a few little chits and the little meeples, it's quite terrifying.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It is a deep-sea deadly adventure, and then you got to do it three times. Because the way it will work, almost every time I have played it with new players, is that every new player will die the first round.
Yep.
Full stop.
Yep.
Then everyone the second round will become a chicken and go maybe three or four chits down, pick up what they can, turn around and get back on the submarine or the boat or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third round, who knows what's going to happen. But the good thing is, for everyone else when you die, is all of the tokens that you've got go onto the space that you died on.
Yes.
If there's ever more than three, they'll go onto the next space deeper down and so on and so on. What's also good is whenever you take the treasure, there are these X chits, which basically are placeholders to say there's no treasure there. And after each of the three rounds, they will disappear so that the deepest, darkest, goodiest loot will slowly get closer and closer to the top as people either successfully bring back loot or more than likely die with loot in their particular scuba diver, I guess.
Yes.
Mm. So I just wanted to talk about this game purely because I had such a good time with it. It is still such a great way to spend 10 or 15 minutes with a great player count, as I say, 2 to 6, but try and play it at 4, 5 or 6, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. It is up there with a game we talk about quite often with things like a no thanks. So you can always just chuck it on a table, and anyone that knows the game, you can go, boom, let's rock and roll into this.
That's right.
And you're in for a good time. The only problem I have with the kind of the oink line, I love the way they look, and a lot of the games, like I said, they pack a lot more punch than what you think for such a small game, but the weird thing is that they're a bit on the expensive side for some of the small. Like, though I've seen, like, Deep Sea for, like, $30-odd, and that's too much.
Yeah.
When for a five or more, you could get, like, your tiny epic zombie, which is quite literally 10 times the amount of game in it. But that's, which is rather annoying, because I would like, there's a few of the other ones that I've wanted to get stuck into before, but just that price point. But don't let that, if you can actually see that onto a shelf somewhere to get local games, get into it and have a crack at it. But
absolutely.
Just hopefully you can find it at a nice price.
I know, that's the thing, because I think we were very generously given this game by David at Grail Games. So that was amazing. Thank you very much, David, and thank you very much, Grail Games.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of this game. It's got enough skill. It's got enough luck with the dice rolls.
Yep.
And it just gives you so much tension in the little box.
There is one thing I must say, though, that if you're playing this with new players, straight away play it a second time. So after you've done the three rounds and whatever else, play it a second time. Because as you said, that first game for new players, you're not wrong. It is exactly that. They go, I'm going to go down as far as I can, and we'll die, and then go, I'm going to go down like one space, get a little bit of treasure and come back up, and then the third round's kind of maybe a mix of the two, and it doesn't really... After that, once they know the game, almost as well as you, because it only takes one game to become an expert pretty much, then that's when the magic will kick in.
Exactly. And on that note, we're going to go, and what are we playing? Deception.
Murder in Hong Kong.
Indeed we are. We haven't played that in a while, so we are the Dice Men Cometh, or at least 2/3 of them. Mark is somewhere on the ocean between Hong Kong and Vietnam.
Yeah, who knows?
Happily ensconced in fiancé-hood. But we will be back next week.
Yes.
But before we go, it is Anzac Day.
Yes.
So, look, big ups to all the serving personnel in Australia, both current and past. It is an amazing day and an amazing part of Australian and international history. So, obviously, it is Anzac Day. I hope everyone was able to have their moments silence at 11 o'clock.
Yes.
So, look, where the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we will see you next week.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.